Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent, that ought to set me straight.
Welcome, my friends. It's Commander Soren, episode 125, where I am now joined by my ongoing co-host in a more consistent Commander Soren podcast here. Season 2, I'm calling it. We're talking about the settling down in 7.2. How you doing? Good morning, Shinmiri. Now, after some technical difficulties, people should be able to hear
you. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Good morning to you, Mephird. I was saying earlier that I can't believe you are already on episode 125. Like, you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. So I started in August of 2016, which is before the beta was even available.
Oh, my God.
So I was so... It was at a weird time in my life. I had just quit my job in advertising, and I was getting ready to write a book, which I'm still doing. It's just, you know, 3 years of Gwent coverage has extended that plan for me. But I was procrastinating, and I just thought I really wanted to get involved with Gwent, and I was just got so interested in it. And when I'm interested in something, I'm like hyper-focused. So I just built this podcast, and it just seemed like there was enough to talk about. Discord was, the community was so like small, and like it was just so easy to keep up with basically every possible thing. Like, there were just scraps of information about this game.
So were you podcasting about Gwent before you actually played any standalone Gwent?
That is correct. That Damn. Is correct.
So you were just like, you were hyped up from it because of Witcher 3 Gwent, I'm guessing, or...
It was, yeah. No. I mean, I was a huge Hearthstone fan at the time. I'd been playing Hearthstone for like 3 years, and I was just crazy about card games. I always have been. So I thought that the standalone Gwent, when it was announced at the E3 of that year, I thought, oh, wow, they're putting some Witcher budget into this card game. Like, it's going to be good. Like, it has to be amazing. Like, they're doing it because of the outcry. Like, they, fans wanted Gwent. Right, it's always been a love letter to the fans. Don't get anything twisted over time. As time goes, people forget that Gwent came out because the fans wanted more Witcher in their lives, and they thought Gwent was a really great way to do it. So, it's always been for the fans. It's always been, and you can tell by the early challengers and all the production value. It's really always been for the fans. So, I really like that. And they were, and I started off, and CD Projekt Red got in contact with me, and by January of the next year, when Nilfgaard was just being added to the beta, Greyboxer and I got invited to CDPR along with Merchant and Mogwai and King Blacktooth, if you guys remember him, and Chaotic Priest, if you guys really have to search your memories way back in time for that one.
That's the only guy that I don't know. That's the only name I don't recognize.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, because Chaotic Priest quickly didn't become... he quickly dropped it. Like, he was like very much... he was very open to the fact that he's like, I'm into Gwent right now because it's hot and I want partnership in Twitch, and I'm going to switch games right after. And that's exactly what he did. So he just didn't really stick around very long, very much. But everybody else is still like a name that people probably know. So yeah, and then it's just been history from there, right? They talked about doing tournaments, and if we were interested, we should contact, and we did. And then Mogwai and I got in with our auditions, and then it's just history from there. So it's just been something that I've just been so hooked up with for so, so long. And I was just like such a normal, regular nobody beforehand. So it's like Gwent really feels like it's like I can never not love it. I can never not be passionate about it, I think. Even
it's
if
like
I'm
your
not
first
even
lover.
Yeah, really it is. Like, I mean, even though Magic the Gathering is like the first love when it comes to card games, like Gwent, there's always gonna be something special about Gwent. And it's so unique of a card game, you can't get that experience in any other game. So it's always gonna... why would you never not keep playing it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking about playing Gwent, we should probably get into 7.2, the settling of. So last time we talked, it was a lot of everything's in the air. What if this works? What if maybe this is potential and stuff like that? And we've had a week. We've seen you are number one NA at this moment, Shinmiri. Congratulations,
yeah,
by the way.
I just finished my placements yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah, I was surprised, but I guess it's still pretty early in the season. Mm-hmm. My MMR, I don't feel like my MMR is that high. Like, I have one faction above 2,500 right now. It's a Squirtle. But yeah, like you said, the meta has settled a bit over the past week. I think we did our first podcast on the day after
It was the day after. Like, we had both played about like 8 or 10 like straight hours, and then we talked about our what we saw out there. So now it's more like what the reality is, not just our viewpoint, but you know, data's come out. Pal Berger did a famous tweet, and I feel like it was like right around this time last year. I swear to God, it was right around this time last year. He did the fourth best tweet. What are your thoughts on this tweet here? As I try to get it, I apologize if this opens on the wrong. Yeah, okay.
I feel like Berger maybe has a sick sense of humor. Like, I don't know if he purposely picked the number four, or if that's just the case and it's just a coincidence. But yeah, last year DJ was the fourth most played leader, and now Shieldwall is the fourth highest win rate leader.
Yeah, the fourth best.
Like, it's like a very deja vu how he's using the play rate and win rate statistics of the fourth best to justify not doing a hotfix, which I think hotfixes should be reserved for something that's truly broken. And I don't think Shieldwall is to that extent that requires a hotfix. I think it could use a balance change or, you know, some sort of adjustment end of month. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it needs a hotfix. And I think his reasoning is okay, but I think a lot of the public will take it the wrong way, especially because of the number four.
Yeah, the number four. yeah, so it's just like there was a little memery there. I wonder if he was looking at the stat that did have the fourth place thing so he could say that. Like, so he could actually reference something in fourth place. But yeah, launch Syndicate DJ, full test, Crazy Commandos, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's funny to me. And we have the stats from last month as well, the season of the Draconid, which feels very irrelevant now. I feel like, and I feel like this is not the first time I've felt this way. The stats represent a meta that is gone completely. So we can just kind of look and see if what we thought was true. Or, I mean, we saw the season of the Draconid stats. Did you see them, or do you have any opinions on them?
I did see them, and the biggest surprise to me was the Overwhelming Hunger being third place, I believe. After Patricidal Fury and Blaze of Glory.
Overwhelming points, I call it. This is one of my least favorite leaders in the game right now, Overwhelming Hunger. I despise this leader because a lot of times my opponent is playing Detlaff, leader. It's so dumb. Like, it just feels like the smorkiest me play points. I'm going to play Detlaff in my leader. No setup. It's just, this is the card that breaks my leader, so I'm playing it. Plus, I'll throw a Manticore in there or a Seductress. Like, that's fine. But it's just something about Detlaff, Hire Vampire. It just feels like it's so cheap.
In past patches, maybe. I think, like, Detlaff, if you look at the numbers, it's a 15 for 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you activate it twice. And a 15 for 10 that depends on 2/3 of your leader is, I think it's fine. Like, you say, like, Saris is a 15 for 11 with one charge of your leader with Ursine Ritual, and it thins by 2. Like, we're in the days now of 15 for 10. A faction having one 15 for 10 that depends on your leader actually being, like, kind of balanced. It's definitely on the stronger side above the provision curve, but, like, for a faction to have one of those that depends on your leader, I think that's okay.
That's a very... So, man, this is just like what I said in the last podcast, the objective conversation that I could really stand to have a little bit. Because I don't even feel like Overwhelming Hunger is, like, too strong or anything like that.
It's not that strong.
It just feels so dumb when that's, like, how I'm losing.
I understand what you're saying. Like, they're just, like, slamming points. They're not, like, the Detlaff double hunger thing, it's like it's not letting you interact with their side. They're not doing anything to disrupt your strategy with that combo either. It's just raw points, and raw points spread out in a way that you can't, like, punish them for it. So yeah, I can understand the emotion that comes with that. But at the same time, I think, like, objectively, it's maybe not anything that needs changing.
It is a good deck, though. And if you follow Reddit and you follow what Saber posts, and I think you should follow Saber97 and what he posts, he tends to post his placement game results for every season he does his placements for. And mm-hmm. Overwhelming Hunger was his monsters list in this case. Patricidal Fury was his Skellige list. Was it Nature's Gift and Shield Wall, the other two?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So, yeah, so Overwhelming Hunger has been pretty good. And also, Saber said in that post that it performed better than he thought it would.
And it was his best win rate. Mm-hmm. It was like 21-4 with it mm-hmm. in his placements. I am a doubter when it comes to Overwhelming Hunger being that good. I think Overwhelming okay. Hunger can be good, but I don't think it's that good right now. I think those numbers that he posted also are very early in the season when people are still trying out random different things and the meta hasn't settled yet. I think now with the meta settling a little bit more, I just don't see his Overwhelming Hunger deck having enough removal or interaction with the opponent's side to really deal with these like engine overload decks like Northern Realms, for example.
That's true. I mean, these stats were taken from the same week in which we were still talking about what the meta could be. Now the meta is much more, I'm sure. So when you're doing your climbing up on Pro Ladder, what have you seen? Like when you hear Powell saying win rate for Shield Wall is the fourth highest, mm-hmm. what do you believe are the three that are above that? My
for
thought,
win rate?
Yeah, because I think Overwhelming Hunger might be one of those three.
It could be. I would say probably like some SK deck, maybe Rage of the Sea. And Nature's Gift. Arnulf could be as well. It'd mm-hmm. be either Rage of the Sea or Arnulf. It might even be Arnulf because fewer people are playing Arnulf this season.
Right.
And I think it's a lot easier. I've always said this whenever people talk about stats, especially when it comes to win rates and play rates. It's way easier for a faction or a leader to have a higher win rate when its play rate is lower.
Especially on the Pro Ladder.
Yeah, especially on Pro Ladder. Like when the play rate is very high, it's because like a wide variety of people are playing it. Like I don't want to sound like condescending or anything, but the casuals are playing it, and like there's way more casuals than there are like top 20 players, right? So they're pushing the play rate up because they're the majority of the player base. Mm-hmm. And so when the larger player base plays a leader, that's going to bring the win rate down because they're like average players versus a small percentage of the best players playing a leader can definitely push it up a lot more.
No, that's cool. And the thing is, it's not condescending. That's the thing about stats. They're just, they are what's telling the truth. It's mm-hmm. the way to interpret the stats is where I guess the fun is. I don't know. Like I used to work in advertising. So like interpreting stats favorably when reporting is like, you know, especially when it comes to like Excel stuff, it was basically my life for like 5 years. So I can see how you can look at your stats and have a lot of ways to interpret it. But the way that, because I want to talk about Shield Wall as well, because that's really what this is all about. Mm-hmm. In the case of this tweet, I would really like to know it really feels like a tease when they kind of, they tease the little bit of data that they have that's influencing a decision that seems to be, I would say, fairly passionate. I don't think that the nerf calls are really that, they're not that they don't feel as vitriolic as some of the stuff that people have really hated in the past. I don't know. What's your opinion on Shield Wall now? It is obviously very good.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very strong. I think it can be frustrating to play against because you just don't have enough answers for their engines. And in the same time, they have two or three really huge dueling answers to answer your big threats. So it just feels like unfair that they're able to answer your big threats, but you're not able to answer theirs because they have the shields and the defender and stuff to protect them. So it's a little bit frustrating to play against. It does kind of warp the meta a bit. If you want to play competitively, you have to play a deck that can at least stand a chance against Northern Realms, against Shield Wall. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's broken to the extent that it requires a hot fix.
So it's like it's a meta benchmark deck at the moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like Nilfgaard is usually playing the role of the meta benchmark deck. There's something about, there's just felt like something so raw about Imperial formation, how it was just going to, it was going to get the big, big points on you, especially when Damien and Skellen started to float away, and it just, it became less dependent on like the pushing and positioning and more just about beating you perhaps with Masquerade Ball in some ways. So it's interesting because Nilfgaard plays well against Northern Realms in this situation, but is considered to be maybe, is it in the fifth and sixth pick, do you think, in, as far as competitive picks right now, Nilfgaard?
Yeah.
Yeah?
For most people, yes.
What happened in this meta?
Well, because, so the meta actually got better for Nilfgaard, but on a paper basis, they got a lot of nerfs. Usurper got nerfed a provision, Brothen's got nerfed a point, Vincent got nerfed 2 points, but got a provision back. Those are like three big nerfs to like Nilfgaard's high-end golds, and they're struggling to find like any better golds to replace them with, so they're still playing them, those three cards that all got nerfed. But the meta, like I said, is better for it. I think Northern Realms being more popular is a good thing for Nilfgaard. And Skellig is still popular. Both of those devotion decks can't answer Masquerade Ball. And then Scoia'tael. Scoia'tael's been going taller with their new Hamadryad Symbiosis sort of deck. So that's also good for poisons and invocation and tall removal and stuff like that. So I think Nilfgaard is being underestimated right now, or at least underplayed.
Nilfgaard has a rough... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I actually have a 72% win rate according to Trinet statistics on Nilfgaard. I just saw this Reddit post, or not, it was like a Reddit comment in one of the posts. Somebody linked to Trinet apparently has keeping statistics for current season of Pro Rank.
How is he doing this?
He's looking at the public profiles on the website. You can look at profiles on the website and you see
how many shows everything. Wins yeah.
And season games for each faction that the player has, as long as their profile is public. So Nilfgaard overall in top 100 and top 20 Pro Rank has the overall lowest win rate, but he also shows the top five players of each rank, of each faction. And apparently, I am the number one Nilfgaard win rate player on Pro Rank.
Cool.
With 72%.
Did you go with the imposter you were talking about before?
I played mostly imposter. Imposter single ball. I also dabbled in a little bit of lockdown earlier in the season, which I think is like very close to the imposter deck. And they're both feeling pretty strong. It just like feels like the meta is very very favorable for that sort of deck, even though it was nerfed from last season.
I would like to see that list for sure. That's pretty cool. That's good, and that's good. Congratulations for just, it sounds like you've had a pretty good season so far. And yeah, you're a big fan of Nature's Gift as well, I believe, right?
I that's the deck that I've had the most fun with, the Nature's Gift Symbiosis deck. Yeah, non-devotion.
I had such a hard time. I was playing, because I was trying to make some Nilfgaard stuff work as well with Imprisonment, which is the new ability. Mainly that's why I was trying it, because it's new. And I really like that extra, like you use one lock charge in round three, you try to always do that. But having that extra lock charge, like it's having, like you always have a collar in your back pocket, felt really good for winning round one. Like it felt good to use that charge sometimes, because you have so many other locks and so many other cards that interact with locks. Sometimes you just, that leader charge is overkill and sometimes did damage to something you wanted to remove or steal anyway. With that, I was playing a Vatcher Petrie's filter, like with Oniromancy, it just really felt fairly consistent. Like it didn't feel like I was ever hurting, and also Petrie's filter could help with morale in some cases too, so I liked it a lot. But I also felt like Dryad's Caress all over the place was just killing me. I couldn't poison anything.
Dryad's Caress, the Scoia'tael deck has like so many purifies that, and you only have like one Vincent that you can really punish the Dryad's Caress.
And there's a bunch of veiled units on top of that too. You got maybe a Guardian or Ethna, or like it's just, you can't poison anything in that deck.
I started playing Leo Bonhart in Nilfgaard on top of all the poisons. Just, this is just like how greedy the meta is. And I was playing poisons with Ball, with Leo, with Invo, and Imposter Vanimar. So that's like five tall removals in Vanimar's the same deck.
He's like mini.
I was still not bricking. I when I built the deck, I was like, this has to be too much. And I played games with it and it was like, no, like Leo almost still never bricked, even though I have so much tall removal already. And on top of that, I have like, you know, answers, locks and stuff to make sure things don't get out of hand. But the meta is just so greedy and tall right now.
Did you find that Leo also could snipe Siri Nova here and there? Did you ever get any Siri Nova kills with Leo's Witcher kill?
No, I did not.
I was just trying to think of any Witchers that would be around.
It is a Witcher.
Get that value. So yeah, so imposter list. And is there any reason, like, is there like a target in the meta that makes the imposter like that good?
Greatswords.
It's Greatsword, huh?
Greatswords, yeah. And then like against Northern Realms. So Greatswords, Arnulf, if they're playing Patricidal Fury, which is like an look at Greatsword and Arnulf, right? When you leader it plus Vanimar on the same turn,
that is
so you're getting 3-point body from Vanimar, 2-point boost from leader, so that's 5 points, and then you're getting double the strength of your target. So it's like 5 plus 22 against an Arnulf. It's 27 points for a leader plus a 6-provision card. Like, that's kind of insane, right?
Yeah, Vanimar feels great right now.
For a leader plus a 6-provision card, that's really good. And against Northern Realms, you can lock through the shield, Vanimar them through the shield, and then very often opponents will like try to Ana Stranger and then shield it, right? Ana Stranger, shield it so that you can't kill it. Then you lock, kill it, and you get your own Ana Stranger that's boosted by 2 on your side.
That's great.
Right? It's great. And or you can do it with like Onseus. Lock their Onseus so that they can't Varaxis it again, then you get a 6-point Onseus on your side to duel the next turn.
It does sound so good. Like, it sounds so good. It's just I really wanted to try Imposter, and I really wanted to try Imprisonment, and I even put an Imprisonment list up on YouTube, and I got a bunch of comments saying like, Imposter's better, right? Imposter's better. And I knew I started the more I talk about it, the more it seems like it is just
Imposter's definitely better, because Imprisonment, it has anti-synergy.
Yeah, it does.
Things that actually supposed to synergize with it. Like Vanimar or Vatier, like you said, like you don't want to damage the thing that you're going to destroy or seize. And also, lock is like a main answer to shielded stuff in NR. But if you imprisonment a shielded target, your 3 damage gets wasted.
Yep. No, I totally feel it. And yeah, I feel like the provisions are fair. But I mean, if this isn't a meta for imprisonment, what could possibly be? Like, if locks are good in this meta, and how could the lock leader be good? If it's not good, then something needs to change with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, like it would be a lot better if the 3 points were like proactive points instead of damaging your target. Like, what's the point of damaging something that's going to be locked anyways? You're not getting any removal value.
And it's something that's been in Gwent for a long time. Old Radovid, Collar right now as well does this. Damaging and locking. The Letho, which is arguably one of the worst cards in the game, is also at his strongest something that adds damage to a lock, which feels, it doesn't feel good all the time.
Yeah, with the Letho, Letho was played originally because he was just good points back then, like 9 for 8 with a lock. It was just good back then.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 damage that you got on the Letho was almost better off as a proactive thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe if imprisonment spawned like a 3-point operative on your side or something that could synergize with something else, then maybe it would be better.
That's a good idea. Yeah, some way to get those 3 points on there that isn't like what they did with Force of Nature was create the leader that essentially had the same amount of points, but is now no longer weak to reset, no longer weak. Like, all those points don't just end up on one unit. You get those 9 points separately. It also triggers Thrive because you're playing that card as well. Thematically, a lot of it changed. It still provides dominance. It triggers Thrive as well, so it's better than it ever was. But it thematically stayed the same because those points were just sort of reallocated in a way that made more sense. So the operative idea, it feels like it's in that same sort of thinking. The best way to make sense with those points would be to give them to you in some other way. I like that a lot. I like that idea a lot. And what is the last thing I wanted to talk about as far as the meta? I'm not sure. I guess that's pretty much it, because, I mean, we can talk about Syndicate, but there's probably not a lot of people playing it right now.
No, it's not a lot of people playing it right now. It's weak to Northern Realms. Syndicate has been historically always weak to Northern Realms, and Northern Realms is most popular faction right now, I would say. It depends on where you are on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think Northern Realms is probably the most popular. So metas, to summarize, is basically Northern Realms, Skellige, Scoia'tael, I would say, are the top three.
Top three? Yeah, that seems like a really safe bet. Just from seeing that mm-hmm. much. Yeah.
And then in terms of popularity, probably like Monsters fourth or Nilfgaard fourth, and then Syndicate last.
Yeah, Syndicate probably last. That, I think Syndicate's always going to carry that burden, being a complicated faction that even when it's strong, mm-hmm. playing it well can be very hard even at the highest level.
Yeah.
So it's always going to be hard. I feel like that also is a balancing challenge as well, because it could just take like no deck guide can really account for how intricate Syndicate can be, I think. But once a deck gets known, the complexity just kind of goes down when more people play it, more people see it on stream against, more people see streamers playing it and such like that. So it's possible that there's something hiding, but Hidden Cache generally seems like it's probably the best. Gulo's saying Tailbot was playing some Firesworn Swarm today. Do you know how well it went for him? I wonder. But I mean,
like fire,
it seems like it has point. Yeah, it seems like it has a lot of synergy.
It has the points. It has the points, but I think right now, you kind of need to measure a deck by how much removal or how many answers it has. It has the points, but it doesn't have answers. Whereas like Northern Realms is a deck that has the points and has answers. Scoia'tael is a deck that has the points and has answers, because it's playing stuff like Heatwave, a bunch of Rebukes. Some people play Becker's Rockslide. So right now you're really looking for a deck that has points and has answers at the same time. Like Skellige, top three factions in the meta right now. They all have the points and they have the answers to some threats.
Skellige was doing that at their most overpowered, because the fact that they can control with points, cards like mm-hmm. Skjordal, cards like
Hjalmar
and Tigvi at the time, like all that stuff is just so strong. So that's really sort of the new defining characteristic of a great deck. I think a lot of people, myself included, would kind of get lost in the power level of leaders, but the leaders, the landscape has changed a lot. Now you're less worried about, I suppose in some cases, like the massive tempo swings of two full card combos or things that are comboing like the scenario all together at once in some situations. I know you can still do that, I think, in some cases, but I feel like, yeah, the landscape has changed now, and now it's just all about answering and just keeping up the answers while developing your board at the same time. So it changes, I guess, what each faction needs as far as love. And I also find that Scoia'tael, one of the best cases for Devotion, before Devotion was even in the game, now is playing with more neutrals than ever. That's just an interesting development.
I mean, you can still play Devotion's, you can still play Devotion Symbiosis, and it's probably greedier in terms of like how many points it can put on its own side of the board, assuming that the Ethne and the Young Dryads, they don't get removed, which is already a big assumption in itself, but it lacks the answers by not being able to run like those neutral cards.
Right on. Shamir, did you know Bushard? Like, did you know him? Like, did you have like conversation with him and stuff like that? Because Lord Bushwalk, also known as Bushar, stopped streaming Gwent this week.
I saw his Twitter. I saw his Twitter and YouTube video.
Yeah, and that's a community member that is, there's a gravity to that for sure. Like, that's, you know, he's in the top of the directory, top three usually, whenever he's streaming up against big players like yourself or Ocean Mud, like, huge community that follows him, and he's stopped streaming Gwent. So I feel like I'd be remiss to not at least mention this.
Yeah, I think he just said he needs a little bit of a break because mm-hmm. of burnout, and that he's personally not enjoying the meta right now, and that's totally fine. I am enjoying the meta right now. I find that, like, my enjoyment level of the meta seems to be opposite what a lot of people, well, some other people's. I don't know if I'm opposite to the majority, but I noticed that, like, I've noticed this a couple times in the past, where, like, when people are complaining about the meta the most, I'm actually enjoying it quite a lot.
I definitely, I'm random. Like the stuff that I like and the stuff that I don't like the stuff that I just, like I said, overwhelming hunger. There's decks that I would like just never play on principle. I know Double Ball is good. I can't bring myself to stream that deck. I would, and especially now, there's a dialogue on my stream about Double Ball. I don't like rant against it. In fact, my chat hates it way more than I do, believe me, because I run Heaver. I can handle it. But it's the frequency of that deck that drives me nuts. Like, no matter how varied the meta is, I'm playing its Master 8 Ball 3 or 4 times a day, every day. I may not see monsters for a whole day. I may not see Skellige. Like, even the most popular Skellige deck, I might miss that. Shield Wall, I honestly haven't seen a lot of it climbing, but I also have been playing a little less this week, I'll be real.
I've also been not seeing that much Shield Wall, personally. But it's so different depending on what time of the day you play or what rank you are. I've talked with some of the Eratusa people. Earlier this week, I had... on the same day, I played like 15 game, maybe like 15 to 20 games, and I had 5 Scoia'tael and 5 Skellige. It was like 14 games. 5 Skellige, 5 Scoia'tael, and 1 game of each other faction. Okay, so that's my experience. On the exact same day, somebody else had like 5 Northern Realms in a row, and they were also on Pro Ladder. I think they were like, maybe like 50 MMR below me. They were maybe playing at like 2400. I was playing at 2450. And so it's not like that far away, but just like very different experiences. So I think it's just like maybe sample size is too low or something, but it's strange.
Yeah. I mean, it's you never know what you're going to get. Even if something's popular, even if you're playing a specific thing, you just never know. I mean, there have been days where I've gotten like back to back. Like, I think when Ethereal Fruits was really strong, I was always preparing for Ethereal to show up, and it would never show up, and then I'd get 3 games back-to-back, like, after I had already given up on, like, seeing it or maybe even teching for it. I'm just like, okay, well, if I'm only going to see the deck, like, 1 every 10 games, then I don't need to really tech for it then. But right. Then it's just like ethereal. I'm like,
here's the effect. If you don't want to match up against Masquerade Ball, just put like Heatwave and Bomb Heaver in your deck, and then you won't see them for like 5 games.
Well, until you do see them, and then you don't draw those cards, right? That's how That's how the game gets you. Oh man. Okay. So I think in this case, so when you say this is your favorite meta, because I have a feeling that you like variety and strength.
Let's not go insane here. I didn't say favorite meta.
Sorry, that was me not choosing my words properly. You say you enjoy this meta. Sorry, was me. I don't know why I put that word in there. I was going to now, I guess I was getting jumbled up. What I wanted to say is your favorite metas, I would assume you prefer variety and strength as opposed to how strong the strongest thing is. Because you tend to speak very favorably about metas in which you see variety. And last meta was about variety, but each faction having like one main deck. Do you think it's the same in this meta?
I think that's still a problem right now. I think it's a little, maybe a little bit better at the moment. But still, I feel like there's not enough variety within factions. I think that every faction has something that's pretty playable or pretty competitive. But within factions, it's still kind of low. And I don't know if it's because just a community perception thing. I think often with Gwent metas, people tend to like find something that works in the first week or week and a half, and then everybody just plays that. And for 90% of the player base, once they find something within a faction that works, that's the thing that they stick to. That's the deck that they use to climb. They're not really looking to explore another archetype once they've started climbing.
And that can dictate a meta too.
I'm guilty of that too. Like if I climb with a faction to 2500, I don't really want to start experimenting with stuff and then like tank back down to 2400 and have to make that climb again. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, like when I'm streaming and I'm playing a deck and I'm not having a great time with it, even if it's a deck that I know, the suggestion in my chat might be like, "Oh, just play something else." Like, it's harder to do that because then, like, there is a learning curve with every deck. Like, I will make all, because I almost exclusively play on stream, so I'll make all my mistakes live, and there's like just so many that you can make. Even like the slightest changes, like just playing with like one new card, can mm-hmm. really like throw you off. So like it seems very obvious like why Milena was good last time I played Skoytel was like Milena Tree and Boar, like that deck. So it just
Harmony?
Made which was that the Harmony list? Was it Harmony at the time?
I think so.
I guess I didn't play it because I didn't play Harmony at all in the nerfed state. So yeah, and I haven't played a lot of it since. But it just seems like a pretty straightforward combo, but I would still mess that up like the first two or three games. Like I would make the mistakes about just where to place everything. And even as now we've cast so many tournaments where that was like a premium strategy. So, but it seems like even at the time, even like the simplest thing, I will just like kind of lapse on what the most optimized path, like the optimized line is. And to do that for like 20 decks a month is wild sometimes.
Yeah, I feel that too. There's a lot of mistakes you can make, especially like the first time you play a deck. Mm. And then there's just a ton of these little interactions that if you don't sit down and think about, you can just end up overlooking or misplaying. And they're usually like, you make the mistake one time and then you remember it and you learn it and you don't make that mistake again. And that's usually how it is. And especially if you're playing all your games on stream, you're bound to run into these sort of situations pretty often.
Absolutely. I'm just asking about the chat. Is there new Gwent news like as of right now? Is there like a new like promotional video of some kind? Or are you guys talking about something else? Just curious about that. Because every now and then you'll see like a new item in the shop that just kind of came out of nowhere. If that's your thing, if cosmetics are your thing. We're seeing a lot of cosmetics right now. And now as a cosmetic-driven game, Gwent is... I feel like there's just... Just coming back to what I said originally, I feel like there's a lot of criticism about cosmetics every now and then, but supporting this game, it's really like that is all the money that's being made for this game right now. And it is a love letter to the fans. And I think supporting esports through these bundles is really important, not just because the players make more money, but it also keeps the interest alive in esports, which is good for me and good for Shinmiri as well. Good for everybody who's involved in Gwent and the community and everything. Like, it's really important, and I think that it's really good when you look at games like Path of Exile. Like, they have a business model. The game is free, but they have a business model to stay in business. So,
In my opinion, the cosmetics are just getting better and better.
They are.
Like this.
That Demoven boat.
Love. Yeah, the headless skin for Demoven, and now the Francesca skin, which is the air bundle, I believe, that's out right now, supporting Gwent Open number 4. That one looks really good. Like, people were complaining about the power creep of cosmetics. They had there was a Reddit post with like the old
Francesca
skin versus the new one.
Yeah, she got quite a makeover.
Yeah.
Yeah, they moved her buns, like her hair buns down. They kind of like her old, it's funny. I honestly did not realize it until I saw the side by side, but the old Francesca looks like made out of clay compared to the new Francesca, who looks like a person. Like, I don't know, they brought like the shoulders down as well, and they changed like they gave her like a shine to her skin where like the old model doesn't have that kind of stuff. So it's, I don't know, maybe they're experimenting with new stuff, maybe we'll get a little bit of a makeover. But this can be a segue to esports, because there is an event coming up, Shinmiri, a good one.
Oh, yeah.
This weekend, 2 days from now, it starts on Saturday. It'll be Saturday and Sunday. It is the return of Wild Hunt. In pandemic times, it's Wild Hunt Online. Wow, we're going to see some... I always loved Wild Hunt because you never know what you're going to see. People bring all sorts of stuff to these types of tournaments, but it does award crown points. So it is not... It's a non-trivial tournament. This is going to be a big deal for some people. Is there anybody who can stand to change the world with a crown point earning here?
Yeah, I think there's a few people. So I think the Colomone and Saber, I think, are... and maybe Pieable are the three that are on the cutoff for Gwent World Masters Season 2. Mm-hmm. Because there are four people that qualify through crown points to World Masters. And I think Colomone is like fifth, Saber's like fourth, and Pieable's like third. And the 10 crown points that the winner gets from Wild Hunt is going to actually potentially determine who goes to World Masters, which is huge.
Yeah, so this is going to be a this is going to be a tournament to remember, I think, especially if it comes down to that kind of thing. Now, Wild Hunt previously was a Philadelphia live tournament that really was just kind of a community event. And really, it just catered to the North American crowd. And I can say, by the way, it's a very different vibe when you're just hanging out with all NA people that are playing Gwent, as opposed to hanging out at Masters, where it's almost exclusively a European crowd, not just like the players, but like everybody around as well. There's just, it's not better or worse, but it's starkly different the way the Americans were hanging out. And it was good. It was very homey, but it was very like people were bringing like meme stuff, but there are people that were like trying their hardest. Gorflow was in that. He came really close to winning. Yeah. Kuchua was the one who won the last one, right?
Yeah,
Trinet, Pumpkin would play, Red Rain would get very far as well. Like, it still had like great players that would come to the tournament, but it was still not quite that razor's edge competitive level like Coloman coming in with the intent to win.
It's going to be hype.
It's going to be pretty hype.
I think that starts, both days start at, the broadcast starts at 5 p.m. CEST, 11 a.m. Eastern. You and I will be casting the second day on Sunday.
Yep. You can find Shamiri and I on the 13th.
Do you know which channel we're going to cast that on?
It is twitch.tv/983events. If I'm not mistaken, that is because our friend Mark Theus is running the show. And he's going to be putting a ton of work into this weekend. A ton of work. So shout out to Mark Theus. Make sure you show your love to Mark Theus. Follow him on Twitter. Tell him he's doing a great job, because he is very good at managing a stream and managing an event. Yeah, 983TV. There you go. twitch.tv/983TV. Mark Theus is in the chat. In the chat. And Christo. Oh, we got some celebs. We got some people. We got some people putting in some good work in the Gwent world right now in the chat. So shout out to you guys. And yeah, so that's going to be, that is the channel. That'll be in the show description as well. Don't miss it. Shinmiri and I will be broadcasting on the 13th. And we also have Apero, Specimen, Ryan Godric, Lionheart, and Theobeastie are also all casting at other points during that. So nice, hearty broadcast team. Should be a lot of different pairings and rotations and stuff. And we'll get a chance to cast that top eight. It's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And that brings us to, I guess, the wind down of the podcast. If anybody has any questions in the chat, let me know. What do you think? If you want our thoughts on anything going on in Gwent right now, tournaments or meta or otherwise, let us know. But Shinmiri, I've been playing actually a lot of other stuff right now. Monster Train has an expansion that came out on the third or the fourth. I can't remember, but that's a great game if you've never played Monster Train, anybody in the chat. It is like Slay the Spire meets Tower Defense meets like the faction comboing of Legends of Runeterra in a way. Each you have a champion as opposed to a single player. It's a great game, and it's I played it yesterday for a couple hours.
It's on my list of games to play. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I probably will in the future.
I really love deck builders, and I really love games that have like runs, but not necessarily all roguelites, but Slay the Spire and this game here, Monster Train, and there's a couple other games that are out right now that I've been meaning to just take a peek at. There's a game like all about vampires called Immortal Empires, I think, but it's more expensive than I thought it was for a card game.
There's a roguelite tactics game called Into the Breach. Have you played that?
I love that game. I played the hell out of that game like 2 years ago. I love that game. It's free, I think, on...
It's free on Epic Launcher right now.
It's free on Epic Launcher right now. Oh, man, that game is... That's
another game that I want to... I played a little bit of it, like a year ago, and it's a game that I have on my backup list to stream as like a variety option.
It's so good. That game is so, so good and quite challenging. Quite challenging at all times, because you have to take so many risks in that game. So great. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I totally forgot about that game. And the graphics too, it's like 16-bit almost. It's just, I love that, because you can tell like the scope of work that the devs kind of put out for themselves. It's like, all right, these are going to be 6x6 grids. It's going to be 16-bit. And then it's just like the design probably just kind of grew from that. And they have just, this is by the same developer who made Faster Than Light, I believe.
Yeah.
So they just have a track record for making like really fun games like this. That's a good one. And Hades, of course. Love Hades. Can't wait for that game to release. It's going to come out soon. They said a fall release. And I think it's coming out for Switch at the same time. Hades is Supergiant's latest game. You've played it, Shinmiri. Yeah. It's like an isometric dungeon crawler roguelite where you are the god. You are the god of the underworld's son, trying to escape the underworld with the aid of Mount Olympus. Oh, it's so good. The dialogue, how they could actually bring so much lore and character into roguelikes, which usually don't have very much of that.
Yeah, very impressive. Really been enjoying that game a lot too.
And Darklight wants me to ask you about, I think I already know about this. I feel like we've actually talked about this on the podcast before, but what is the premium parasite challenge, Shinmiri?
You know how channel points, there's like community challenges that you can do with channel points now?
Okay.
So I started one for premium parasite because, I don't know, I made a big deal about how premium parasite grosses me out and I would never premium that card. And then one time I actually somehow opened a premium parasite in a keg somewhere without realizing, and I had to go and mill it in my collection. Does that
serve? So it never looks
and
at you.
So now chat wants me to premium my parasite. So it's an 8 million channel point community challenge over 30 days. We're already at like 40% after like 5 or 6 days, so I'm pretty sure we're gonna hit it.
So I actually didn't know about this community challenge thing. I have been trying. I feel like I had a good idea with channel points. Like, get enough channel points, you can challenge me to a fight. I felt like I made an amount of points that was like very fair for this. But I swear, I would face like every day or every 2 days, I would have like the same four people be lining up for duels, and it made it really hard to climb the ladder when I had to stop for like 2 hours every day. And it's not like I wasn't having fun, but it just felt like my show was now about playing these players all the time. So I had to disable it, and I've had a hard time racking my brain on how I can really do a better
job. You can either, like, disabling is an option. You can also obviously raise the cost, or you can limit the number of redemptions per stream so that you're not playing these viewer battles like all stream or half of the stream every day.
Yeah, I could just do one a stream. So there's like a feature fight. That's good. I think I need to talk to more streamers about this kind of stuff, because I'm already boomering on my three. I've been a partner for like 3 years now, and there's stuff on my page that's been there since the beginning. Not that but it's like not wrong. It's still like that is my Instagram link, you know? That is the Commander's Horn Patreon, but it's I haven't had anything new to say since for a long time. I've never rebranded, mainly because, also, I'm sure he's in the chat right now, Tien Gabor has done these beautiful graphics that you see around us right now. The Commander's Horn graphics, the animation, I can happily say that I think that this is an awesome podcast because of this, because, you know, I didn't make it. This is Tien Gabor's amazing work with the animations and stuff like that. And it honestly made it so I didn't feel like I had to do any sort of rebranding at all to continue with like a quality that someone who's been doing this for an amount of time has, because at this point I would pay huge amounts of money for this kind of work right now. And I've been thinking about rebranding a little bit, not just because having a name like McBearded requires me to have a beard all the time, but just because, you know, freshening things up is always nice. There he is. Tien Gabor, VIP. That's the guy.
There he is. Nice job.
All right, so last thing I want to talk to you about is Spellbreak.
Okay.
So Spellbreak is something that I kind of want to put everybody on notice for, because the main thing, the reason why I want to get the word out about this game is that at first glance, this game looks forgettable, because it looks like a battle royale with Fortnite graphics. I'm already not interested, right? A lot of people probably would say immediately, but there is a standout difference to this game. Spellbreak is a battle royale where there's no guns and everybody is a wizard. And you can live your dreams of flying around in the sky like an anime, like Goku, and throwing fireballs or lightning bolts and leading all your shots, all skill shots. Nothing even resembles a gun at all. It feels like Smite. It feels like Overwatch in a lot of ways. You need to like land your shots. It's wildly different. What's your opening experience with this game, Shinmiri?
I started playing it last night.
Mm-hmm.
So I only have a few hours of experience, but it's very addicting so far. It's really fun. I like this sort of game. I'm not turned, like, I don't think the graphics are like a turnoff for me at all. I like the sort of graphics. Mm-hmm. The thing that I wouldn't like about Fortnite is the building aspect.
That's true. And I don't like that either.
That's the main turnoff for me with Fortnite. So, like, I like how Spellbreak has all these skill shots. You have to, like, it's not auto targeted. So it reminds me of an MMORPG, an action MMORPG that I used to play called Dragon Nest. Okay. And so I really like the style.
Interesting.
And it also reminds me of Divinity Original Sin with the elemental combinations.
Yes.
You know, like set up a poison puddle and then set it on fire to make it like dragon fire or something.
Yeah, that's probably a better... I was saying it was kind of like Magicka in that regard, but I think that the comparison to Divinity is much more accurate because that's how the gameplay really feels. You're only really ever comboing like two things together. And yeah, it's really good. It's very it feels like satisfying to get better in a way that like solo play is impossible. I can really barely handle it, but it is... oh no, Into the Breach was free until today, I just saw in the chat. Picked a bad time to talk about it, I guess.
Oh, damn.
Well, it's still worth it because it's not an expensive game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great game. Squads is where it's at, I think, because solo play against all these pre-alpha testers is just a wild experience. It's so humbling. Even if you're good at games like this, there's a learning curve to this one.
For sure.
Yeah.
I personally am doing solo. I think as a... Like when you're starting out, I think doing solo is a little bit better because squads is just more complex. It brings a whole element of teamwork and coordination and communication along with it. Whereas solo, you can just like focus on yourself and learn all the different elements and the different gauntlets and what they can do.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been focusing on so far.
That is true. I find that in squads, you feel like you're making more of a contribution to an effort that actually will result in a victory. With solos, there's so many. It's so easy to disengage from fights in this game that I find that solos are all about closing the deal, which is really hard to do. Like, I feel like I can fight well, but being able to fly away is such a big deal. And eventually you just have these small circles at the end of all these people that just escaped all their fights and have nowhere else to fly. So it can be... Solo can end up... I'm just trying to find a way. I need to close the deal. You just have to always have flight runes. I think they should ban some runes in solo, honestly. But it's a great game. Go ahead.
Yesterday, in one of my games, I was one of those flight runners that you despise. I had a legendary flight rune, and then this guy was chasing me for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And eventually, they caught me. Eventually, they caught me because you it takes a while to heal. And you run out of heals pretty easily late game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really enjoying the game right now and looking forward to improving. And I think I might stream the game as well and see how it goes as like a variety game.
Hey, I mean, like I said at the top of the stream, well, first of all, I have some people that I already play with that a lot of you may already know. Gulo's in the chat. I've played with Delta as well. I played with Boost. And we talked at the top of the show. I think Pumpkin's playing it and I would reach out. Maybe we could do a squad stream in the future.
I think that'd be
pretty dope. Yeah, because squatting is squatting usually ends in when you engage an enemy, you will destroy them. They won't get away. And if they do get away, it'll be like one person that gets away and you have killed the other two people. So it feels like you're progressing more in squads because you actually are exiling. You actually are getting those kills early on. Even if it's early on, because you can. But securing those kills, man, that's where I got to work on it. Squad. I'm saying squatting, not squatting. Like a squad of three. Squad of three. David Rodriguez Jr. in the chat. But yeah, I mean, that'll do it for the podcast, I think. That was a good chat. Thanks again, Chinmiri, for coming on and doing these more regular chats about Gwent and other things, I guess, at this point.
Of course. It's fun.
And thanks to the chat for hanging out. I'm going to get this on YouTube as well. And yeah, I might be live a little bit later, maybe for some evening spell breaking. I don't know. It tends to be where more people are playing. So I like doing squads. So it seems like a later time it's good for an off stream too, because I definitely like playing cards in the morning and then something else in the evening. So yeah, it's going to be a cool week, I think. And then, of course, don't forget Wild Hunt Online happens 11 a.m. EST, 5 p.m.
EST, yep.
5 p.m. CEST, and that's going to be That's going to be crown points on the line, and there's going to be some great players playing. Lots of great casters. Shinmiri and I casting on the 13th, doing the top eight. Twitch.tv/983TV. Bookmark it. Turn on your notifications. It's going to be a good time. And I guess that'll do it. Shinmiri, I'll say goodbye to you for now, but I'm sure we'll talk in the future about spellbreaking or whatnot.
Maybe even this afternoon. We'll see. Let
Maybe
me know
this afternoon.
If you need another person for spellbreak.
And I'm still on the lookout for like a full group of Among Us. That's like a totally other thing to discuss, but that's like a game I'd love to play at least once. Like a board game, like a video game that's a board game. It's it looks really, really cool. But that's for another day, perhaps. I'll cut it off here. Thanks, everybody. I will do the outro, actually, right here. Or will I? Because it's much easier to do it here. So that'll be it for us. Thanks again for everybody who for stopping by. And for Shinmiri, this is McBeard.
Yeah.
Best of luck on the path.